We are up to Parashat Vayigash. This parsha is probably the most exciting parsha in the Torah. If you want to have a good time, take out a Medrash Rabbah or a Medrash Says and start reading all the fantastic Midrashim about this parsha. You'll suddenly read about how Yehuda was a tremendous gladiator. Yehuda outdoes the stories of Superman and Batman and every comic book you can imagine in this week's parsha. If you read the Midrashim, we have fantastic stories about Yehuda's strength, Yehuda's roar. At one point, all the guards are standing around, all the Egyptian guards. Yehuda and his nephew get upset. They both let out a roar. The Midrash says all the guards lost their teeth. Everyone's teeth not only chatter, they drop out. Okay. Fantastic stories about this parsha. Maybe tomorrow night we will invest in them. We'll invest some time learning them.
Tomorrow's late night.
Tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, we will be learning, yes. But first, a word from our sponsor. Just joking, not our sponsor. But today, 3 years ago, Reuven Dov Ber Ha'Ezrachi, 2 years ago, disciple from Machon Meir passed away in a diving accident. And it's in his memory that we've been dedicating our Dov's Minute, adding a minute to our learning. So I hope to dedicate tonight and tomorrow night learning to his memory. We'll take just a minute to mention who he was. He was a Polish priest who studied across from an auditorium that was rented out to lectures on Sunday, and the lectures, a rabbi would give a lecture about how a person can be a better person and what the Torah guides us how to lead our lives. And feeling a need to develop spiritually, he figured, I'll just put a coat and a hat and no one's going to know the difference, and I could learn how to be a better person from those lectures too. And one thing led to another. Finally, he started asking questions, and after asking questions, and for the first time in his life, he was getting answers that he never got before. He decided that he's leaving the fold and joining the faith, and he converted. And then he came to Israel. He learned in the Pardes Institute for a while, and then he joined us here. And you'd find Dov sitting in the library in the afternoons during the break and at nights before class, after class. He's always sitting with the art scroll learning, trying to get in another page of Gemara. Unless, of course, someone wanted a helping hand from him. He had probably the warmest smile I've ever seen. Just a warm, kind person. Always happy to help. At one point, my wife was in the hospital and we gave class at home. So at the end of class, I asked him if he could stay for 5 minutes. I would run across the street to buy some groceries, and he'd watch the kids. The kids were sleeping, just to make sure everything was okay. He said, fine, but I noticed your light switch here has a bit of an issue. Let me just take a look at what the issue is. Just bring me 2 screwdrivers. I said, fine. To make a long story short, as was his way in many other things, he fixed the light switch and fixed everything that was wrong with the lights by the time I made it back from the groceries. When he was at the Pardes Institute, after Yom Kippur, they said, we need help building the sukkah. And that night he went up and did it. And then after sukkahs, they said, we need help taking apart the sukkah. And the next morning when they came to see what needed to be done, there was nothing left to be done. You're talking about a sukkah that sat, I don't know, if 100 people. It was a big sukkah. Even in Poland, he took care of kids who didn't fit into the mold, didn't fit into the system. He kept an open house for them. And now, this time of year, he went diving in Dahab, searching for the taking people on tours in the to see the Blue Hole, which is basically you go along a jagged cliff in Dahab, and then at some point there's a break, there's a hole, a few 25 feet down or something, and through that you can see light coming in, and that's why it's called the Blue Hole. And it seems that after he took the tour, he himself went back to look at that hole, and he missed it. And he went down to a depth that caused him probably to have a heart attack, and he died down there. It took days to bring his body back up and bring him here. Even his family, that wasn't Jewish, it still isn't Jewish, even his family, they did an unusual thing. They said, instead of burying him here next to us in Poland, we know how connected he was to the land of Israel, and so they brought him here to Israel to be buried. He's buried here in Har HaMenuchot. So we dedicate our learning every night. We try to add 1 minute in his memory at the time when we came back from the funeral, so then everyone still knew him here at Machon Meir. We decided that there's one thing we could do for him. He didn't leave behind any Jewish children or family. So we said we'd add merits. In his merit, we add a minute of learning. After learning's over, that's Dov's minute. So tonight, we'll also dedicate our learning to Reuven Dov Bera Ezrachi. In Paradise, they said they would take care of it. I don't know more than that. Whenever I have an opportunity, I try to say, but I don't have as many opportunities. Yeah.
It was almost 2 years ago. I went here for a couple of weeks. Rob Lisman took a bunch of the guys from the English department to the gravesite. This is the 30-day anniversary of Stasim Tehillim.
Yeah. It was 2 years ago. It was just the end of December 2007.
I was in January.
How old was he?
Yeah. How old is he? I think it was 44.
He was
a professional diver and a professional carpenter and a professional good person. Big professional out there.
After everybody went up, he went down alone.
Right.
I said, no, always have to have a buddy, right?
Yeah, but he was a guide. I mean, he knew stuff. So let's begin our parsha. Our parsha begins with a tremendous face-off. Yehuda versus Yosef. Yehuda threatens they're going to destroy Egypt. Yehuda is convinced that Yosef is the most immoral person on the planet. He knows they've been set up. He knows the Egyptians have women sleeping with women and men sleeping with men, and he has this younger brother. I mean, Binyamin already has 10 kids, but he has this good-looking younger brother, and he knows that Yosef, who's this good-looking king, must be eyeing Binyamin because he wants him for immoral activity. And so Yehuda tells Yosef, I'm not going to let you get away with this so easily. And even though the pasuk represents Yehuda's wording in a gentle way, Yehuda spoke the way politicians talk, saying things gently on the surface and having an ulterior meaning behind the surface. We'll go into that as we review the parasha. He basically pushes Yosef to a corner where Yosef says, okay, everyone out. And then Yosef reveals himself. The brothers are in shock. And Yosef tells them, don't worry. I now recognize my job is to help everyone. That's what I'm here for. Bring everyone down. Paro backs him and says, bring everyone down. Yaakov faints when he hears it. He has a hard time swallowing the news. And then he says, okay, we'll go visit him before we die. He travels to Beersheba. And God says, go down to Egypt. That is the future of the Jewish people. You go and I'll be with you and I'll bring you back. Yosef will take good care of you. They come down. Yosef goes out to greet his father. He brings representatives to see Paro. And Yehuda has been sent in advance of the entourage to ensure that they have a good place to settle and they have a base medrash. They have Torah when they get there. When Yaakov comes before Paro, he blesses Paro. Paro asks him, how old are you, old man? And he tells him, and they settle down over there. The parsha concludes with the Egyptians running out of money and ultimately reaching a point where they all have to sell themselves into slavery to Pharaoh. And Yosef wisely guides them and sets up the system so that they recognize that all of their land belongs to Paro. And they work the land and they faithfully pay new taxes. The parsha ends with taxes. So let's begin the parsha with more depth. Our parsha has a critical point that most people will miss. And that is that in our parsha, we advance from being the family of Yaakov to being Bnei Yisrael. It is hidden in the message that God gives Yaakov. We are now a people. Although we will number but 70, but we are entering Egypt as a people. We're not entering Egypt as a family anymore. The 12 tribes have evolved, and the names are less important. The 12 tribes, their names are important, but after that, names become less important. It is the story of the Jewish people. It is the story that will take us into Egypt, and ultimately out of Egypt, into the desert, throughout the rest of the Torah. So, in our parsha, we start seeing the Jewish people as a people. Our parsha begins with Yehuda facing off with Yosef. Let's recall what happened. They came down to Egypt, they wanted food, and there's this young, brilliant genius who's the only one who's managed to save food. The whole world is coming to Egypt. And this guy is sitting there and he has to approve everyone that's coming to buy food. They come to the interview and he says, what are you sending 10 people for? If you're all from one family, what do you need 10 people and why didn't you send your servants? You guys must be spies. They say, no, we're not spies. He says, then why'd you come from 10 different entrances? They say, we lost a brother. Where we've been looking for him. Where'd you lose the brother? Well, it's a long story, and there's a little one left at home, and Joseph says, you guys are spies. Locks them up. They're thinking. Joseph always speaks to people gently and kindly, and when his brothers walk in, he recognizes them, and he changes his tone of voice. This is a Joseph the Egyptians didn't know. Suddenly Yosef's talking as the leader. Yosef knows that the visions he saw had a purpose. And that purpose transcends time. The purpose of his dreams is the future of the Jewish people. All of the Jewish people are going to be called Ephraim. When Yosef names his son Ephraim, it's not only his son that he's naming Ephraim. The word Ephraim comes from the word Ephrati. The word Ephraim is like the word Yisrael, the powerful one. And the word Ephraim represents the future of the Jewish people. When we bless our children, Yesimcha Elokim keEphraim veChimnashe, there's tremendous meaning to that blessing. And so Yosef knows that the visions he saw are visions that will transcend time. They are not visions about that moment alone when the brothers will bow to him. But rather they are visions that represent the dream that Nebuchadnezzar will see in the book of Daniel. They are visions that represent the Melech HaMashiach that's yet to come. The vision he saw, the dream he saw is not only about now. It's about the functioning of the world and the future of the world. Where is the world headed? On the other end, we've been studying in the Drashot Aran, the different opinions among Rishonim as to why we do signs, why God has us do signs to lock in prophecies. In our Friday class, we've already learned the Ramban's interpretation in Drashot Aramban, we learned the Ran's questions on the Ramban, and we learned the Ran's Derech. We're in the middle of the Ran's Derech. One thing we know, a sign locks in the prophecy. Why do you need it? What happens when you don't have it? Join our Friday class. We're exploring that there. But at the end of the day, Yosef knows that if he can bring them to a point where they will be in fulfillment of the dream, it is locking in the dream for future times as well. It is locking in, so to speak, Mashiach ben Yosef. The kingdom that will be Kama alumati vegam nitzava. The stalks stand and they remain erect. The kingdom that is represented in Nebuchadnezzar's dream as that mountain that covers all of Nebuchadnezzar's vision. That mountain that's going to be there and not going to budge. Remember, what was Nebuchadnezzar's dream? He sees an idol, the head is gold, the chest is silver, the thighs are copper, and then copper mixed with earthenware. And then finally, a rock comes out of nowhere, smashes it all down to size of the chaff, and then a wind blows it away, and suddenly this huge mountain fills the screen. Doesn't see anything but the mountain. Doesn't know what it means. Daniel tells him those are the four kingdoms that will rule the world until the final kingdom. Melech HaMashiach, that will cover the world and will not budge, will remain like the mountain. That is the vision Yosef saw. Yosef's vision of a stalk that stands and is erect, doesn't budge. Kama alumati vegam nitzava. My stalk stood, didn't budge, remained erect. All the constellations bow to Yosef. Yosef sees where the future must go. And Yosef wants to lock in that prophecy. Yosef is also giving the brothers an opportunity to do tshuva. And Yosef is also testing the waters. Where are they holding? And so they go back. They tell Yaakov, you know, he says, if we don't bring the little one back, he's going to send his men after us here. We're going to die. Yaakov says, I don't trust you guys. Oti shikalten, Yaakov says the most powerful words hidden in last week's parsha. Oti shikaltem, Yaakov says to them, you made me a childless father. You took Yosef from me. You took Shimon from me. And now you want to take Binyamin from me. Notice he blames them for Yosef as well in last week's parsha. He says, Oti shikaltem, you made me a parent who's lost children. He says to the brothers, they're all my kids. How come my grandkids are all okay? How come it's only my kids that disappear whenever you guys are all together? Finally, he has no choice. They go back down. Yosef greets them warmly. On the surface, it seems just like standard Edom treatment. Edom always treats us warmly then coldly, then warmly then coldly. Sometimes they're our best friends, right? Just look at the news. And then sometimes they show a different face. It's always been our relationship with Edom. So when we come down to Mitzrayim, Yosef brings them in, gives them to drink. And then when they leave, he tells them, you know, I put you through a lot. I'm giving you your money back, free food. They've gone a distance, and he sends his son and his men after them, and they say, what'd you do, guys? How could you do that? You guys stupid? Think you could just walk away with the king's goblet? And you know, it's a real chutzpah. The brothers say, what are you talking about? We've been honest, we've been good, we've been kind. Look, we've always lived up to our words. We brought back extra money, extra gifts. Come check. He checks, and of course, the last place he checks is where they find the goblet. And the brothers turn on Binyamin. Thief, the son of a thief. Your mother stole. She stole Grandpa Lavan's truffin. You're going just like her. You endangered all of us. What's with you? They all tear their clothing. Binyamin HaTzadik never sinned a sin that would merit death. He's one of those tzaddikim that didn't merit death. All the brothers tear their clothing. They come back. Yosef says, what's going on here? Yehuda says, what can we say? You know, God did something here. God wants to punish us. There was a rabbi named Pappus. You guys heard of Pappus? Pappus and Lulianus. Pappus and Lulianus volunteered themselves to be killed. The Romans said, princess was found dead next to this Jewish city. If we don't know who did it, we're killing the whole city. Pappus and Lulianus said to the rabbis, we didn't do it, but better we die than the whole city dies. They went to the Romans and said, kill us. The Romans interviewed them before they killed them. And Pappus and Lulianus said, you guys needed to spill blood because a princess was found dead. We didn't kill her, but we're going to take the blame. Kill us. And the Romans started asking them questions, and Pappus and Lulianus said, hey buddies, if God wants us dead, we're going to die. We could have died because a lion attacked, we could have died because a bear attacked, or we could have died because a Roman attacked. So God wants us dead at your hands. Fine, we'll die at your hands. God has his ways of killing. It doesn't matter. If we're supposed to be dead, we will die. So that concept needs a lot of elaboration. How does that work? A guy puts himself in front of a firing squad and says, well, if I'm not meant to die, I'm not going to die. It doesn't exactly work that way. But there is an aspect where we say, "Megalgelin choval yedei chayav." Bad things come to the world through bad people. We have to try to be channels for good in the world because bad things come through bad people. So Yehuda turns to Yosef and says, "Your Honor, God wanted to punish us. So that's why I'm standing here with you on this topic. We're caught over a theft that's really not valid. We've been set up. You're unfair. But we have to get punished. We have a sin way back in our history, and God's taking us to task for that. So, you know, let's talk. Because your claims against us are illegitimate." Yosef says, wait a second. You think that you just deserve a punishment and I'm going to be the vehicle for bad things to happen to you? No. I'm not going to be a vehicle for bad things to happen to you. We're going to do justice here. I'm a God-fearing person, as you guys know. I've always played it fair. Let's talk. Yehuda steps up. All the brothers step back. Here we see the role of a leader. Yehuda took responsibility when it was a question of going back to Mitzrayim or not. And now, push came to shove, Yehuda stepped up to the plate. Our sages give us interesting instructions in life. On the one hand, Chazal say, "Bemkom she'en anashim, hishtadel liyot ish." If there are no men around, make believe. You force yourself, be a man. Even though you're not a man. But if there's no one else, then you be the man. Hishtadel in Mishnah is not like in modern Hebrew. On the other hand, Chazal said there are certain responsibilities we should never take. And that is the responsibility like Yehuda took. Never cosign, Chazal said.
Never what?
Cosign. You never be liable.
For someone else's mistake?
For someone else. You have to take a loan, you be liable for your own loan. What are you being in Arev, a cosigner? Yehuda says, "Dad, I'll take responsibility. Anything happens to Binyamin, come to me. I'm in charge." You know, that's very nice. But you see, here things went out of his control. Chazal said, you know, if you ever cosign, you've really messed up. Get out of it as soon as you can. A deer does everything he can to get out of the trap. You have to be like a deer. Hinatzel ketzvi miyad. The second you've cosigned, get out of it. Why? Because if you have the money, pay the money. You don't have the money, don't take responsibility for the money. Yehuda takes responsibility for something that's beyond his control. As we see, as it played out. So Yehuda tries to get out of it. Yes, sir?
Well, when you say cosign, the first thing that comes to mind is like a loan. And someone who's young like us might not have the credit, and we would need a cosign in order to get approved. You know, we're financially stable, but we don't have this history to show that we are. You know.
What I did when I was in your stage of the game, mm-hmm. I wanted to rent an apartment. The landlord wanted a cosigner. I said to the landlord, "Look, I wouldn't cosign for anyone else, so I can't ask anyone else to cosign for me. But what I will do is I'll give you a deposit, a security deposit. How much do you want? $1,000? $2,000? Rent is, at that time, rent was $450. I mean, talking a little bit back in history. Rent is $450. I'll give you 3 months in advance. And I'll give you checks on all the utilities, like that cover 2 months' utilities. if he wouldn't have agreed, I'd have to move on to the next apartment. What can I do?
However,
he agreed. every apartment I took, they agreed. I don't think I ever had a cosigner. Because I told them I wouldn't cosign for someone else. And guys in the Machon sometimes ask me to cosign when they want to rent apartments. I tell them, "Guys, I'll lend you the money to give him a security deposit. I can't cosign. How do I know when it'll come to me? How do I know when it'll be time to collect? I'll be happy to help you if I could. If I could lend you the money, then I'll lend you the money. But if I can't take responsibility." "No, like once a month, once every 2 months, I get this request. And I'm happy to help, guys. But I can't cosign. I can't do that."
So when it gets to the point where you no longer needed it, then...
I mean, I always preferred to give a security deposit. And if I didn't have that option, that wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. It's not against halacha. It's a very kind and good thing to do. But you have to recognize that you're endangering yourself. It's not against halacha. It's permissible to cosign. You have a lot in the Gemara that discusses the laws of cosigning and who you collect from. But you got to realize that you're putting yourself in a situation where you don't know when it'll catch up to you. Just a second, he's waiting, sorry. Yeah.
Rabbi, nowadays in Tel Aviv you can also, like Rabbi said, you can put out a huge faucet and in the place where you rent like 3 months before, 3 months out, it's now a common thing in Tel Aviv that you pay a few months forward.
So the only thing I would warn you guys is that there was a case here in the neighborhood that a guy took an apartment, gave a security deposit, stayed in the apartment for 7 years. At the end of the 7 years, he asked the landlord for a security deposit back. The landlord said, show me the receipts from all the months you were here. Maybe you missed 2 months paying rent. The guy said, who are you kidding? We both know I paid you every month. I paid you the rent cash. Landlord said, I don't know. Gee, I don't remember. 7 years, maybe not. Prove it. You prove it. I'll give you back the security deposit. So don't be stupid. I'm saying you give a security deposit, make sure you have the receipts, make sure you have a receipt that you gave the deposit. Do it intelligently. The guy lost the security deposit. Lost like over $1,000. The landlord was obviously unfair, but he didn't have the proof. So you gotta, guard yourself. Who's the landlord? Okay.
Where was, what city?
Here. In this neighborhood. Here. Kiryat Moshe. Here. Okay. But there are wonderful landlords all over. Don't worry about it. So Yehuda steps up to Yosef. And Yehuda says, let's talk. And don't get upset. And that already indicates that Yehuda's telling him things that might get him upset. You asked us whether we have a father or a brother. Rashi says an interesting thing here. Rashi says, what'd you ask us so many questions for? We came to buy food. Were we looking to marry your daughter? Were you looking to marry our sister? Whenever I interview guys or girls for Shiduchim, I ask them about their siblings. And people tell me, what difference does it make? This is who I am. Who cares who my siblings, my sister, my brother, what they're doing? You see from this, Rashi, it's not that way. They said, if we would have been looking to marry into your family, or you would have been looking to marry into our family, then it makes sense. You ask us what siblings we have, what everyone's doing. That's part of what you need to know when you get married, clear in Rashi. So guys, it's worth finding out.
So we say our sister, our brother's married, is being a goy, is that going to make us look bad?
I think you could answer that question. But I think that we learn from the Torah that what you look for in the shidduch are the midos. So you could say, my brother is dating the volunteer who's working with him in the Red Cross, volunteering in Uzbekistan. You know, you don't have to mention that she's Uzbekistanese, right? Look at the positive. Look at the good traits she has. Say the positive. I'm serious. I'm not joking, and it's not lying.
I'm telling the truth. My brother is.
Okay, so I'm saying the points to stress are the good traits that run in the family. So Yehuda comes forward, and Yosef listens. Yehuda says, "You know, we have an old father. Yeah, we told you he has a child that's the only one left from his mother, and they have a special bond." And you said, bring him here, I want to look at him. And we said, we can't. And you said, if you don't bring him, we shouldn't come back. And when we came, our father didn't want to let go. And finally, he agreed when I promised him that I take responsibility. Now, I can outdo him in anything. I am stronger than him. I could work better than him. Whatever you want him for, I could do better. So I can't let him, my brothers, go back without him because my father will have a heart attack. He'll die. He'll die of sorrow. And Yehuda's begging. Chazal say the conversation went a little differently. Yeah.
Well, if Yehuda knew that Yosef wanted, if Yehuda thought Yosef wanted him, why did he volunteer himself? He can't put himself in such a position.
So Yehuda says to him, "You're playing games. What do you want him for? Whatever you need, I'm better than him." And Yehuda says to him, I'm going to draw out my sword. And Yosef says, and I'll wrap it around your neck. And Yehuda says, if I draw out my sword, I'm not putting it back till I paint the city with blood. And Yosef says, yeah, you guys are good painters. I know, you painted your brother's garment with blood too. You guys know how to do that really well, don't you? Yehuda says, you know, the fire of Shechem is burning within me. In Shechem, they took our sister, a girl. They took her forcibly. And my two brothers, they destroyed the city because of the illicit relationship that happened there. Yosef turns to Yehuda and says, maybe it's the fire of Tamar that's burning in your heart. Yehuda, you can't talk to me about illicit relationships. Where were you when you were going down that road? You think you're legitimate to judge what's an illicit relationship? Yehuda lets out a roar. He says, how can I go to my father? He's going to die. Yosef says, tell him the same thing you told him about Yosef. What's the problem? Whatever lying you sold him about your brother Yosef, sell him about Binyamin. Tell him, you know, Binyamin went the same way Yosef went. Paint the garment, paint the story. Yehuda sees he's not getting anywhere. He tells Naphtali, go count the streets. Count how many streets, main marketplaces there are in Mitzrayim. We're going to divide them. I take half, you guys take half. Yosef sees that he doesn't have that much time left. Yosef tells the brothers, wait, Yehuda, you know, Mitzrayim isn't Shechem. You destroyed Shechem, the world went on ticking. You destroy Mitzrayim now, there will be no world. The world needs Mitzrayim for sustenance now. Yehuda says, how will I see my father? There's a discussion in Midrashim. Who won the argument? Was it Yehuda that said, I'm not interested, we're destroying Mitzrayim, we're going to paint the city in blood? Was it Yosef? And then Yehuda had to say, yeah, you know, but I can't. What am I going to do with my father? At some point, Yosef saw he had no choice. And Yosef saw that they were going to do anything, but they were not going to give up on Binyamin. He saw the solidarity. What's about to happen? We're about to enter Galut. We're about to enter Egypt. What happens in this week's Parsha is the beginning of those tragic years, those dark years in Jewish history, the years where we were in Egypt and we kept almost nothing. Remember, the Jews left monotheism in Egypt. The Jews were idol worships. They were idol worshippers. They were pagans like the Egyptians. And Yosef knows that the key to surviving the Galut is unity. So Yosef is pushing the brothers to a corner to bring out the maximum in them. Sometimes you don't know what you feel for something till you've expressed it. Yosef wants to ensure that everyone here is willing to put everything for Binyamin, and that the brothers have expressed the unity that is necessary to make it back out of the Galut. Yosef kicks everyone out of the room, and then he says, you guys came here looking for a brother, right? Well, I have news for you. He's in this palace. Brothers look at him open-eyed. He says, I'll call him. Yosef! Yosef, your brothers are here. Yosef, you want to come out? He starts calling in different directions. The brothers are looking in every direction. They never said to him that the brother's name was Yosef. How does he know? He's calling Yosef in every direction. And the brothers start scattering around the room, looking where? Finally, the brothers have looked, and they look at him, and he says, I'm Yosef. The brothers step back. In two words, Ani Yosef, with those two words, he changed the whole picture. Suddenly, there is no threat. They don't have to worry about a brother being taken. Suddenly, the whole picture makes sense. So, that's what he was doing. Sometimes in life, the picture seems like there's no way out. Seems like there's no way this is going to work. Think about where the brothers were holding a moment before he said, Ani Yosef. They have no choice. They need this man for food. The man has set them up, and he has a claim that's held its weight in court. He's the most powerful man on the planet at that moment. Technically, Paro is above him. Practically, he runs the show. They need him, and he's saying, I'm going to take your brother. They've already volunteered. Kill the one you find the goblet by. Kill him. The rest of us will be slaves. Now that the goblet was found, they're changing their claim a little bit. It seems like it can't get much worse. What are they going to do? How are they going to break news to the father? And with two words, the whole scene changes. Ani Yosef. In life, we have to know that God can do that at any moment. Just like the brothers saw no way out. They didn't know how they'd make it out of here. It seemed like it was over. It's never over. Never over till God says it's over. And we don't know when God says it's over. This insight I learned from the Rosh Kol in Tiferes Yerushalayim, Rabbi Avram Ort. The importance of remembering Ani Yosef, how two words changed the whole picture. And he asked them, now tell me the truth. Is my father really still alive? You said that over Binyamin he would die of sorrow. What happened when I was lost for 22 years? What really happened? Yaakov's spirit died. He lost his connection with Hashem. He no longer had Ruach HaKodesh. The truth is that for 22 years Yaakov's spirit was dead. And so Yosef says, is my father really still alive? And the brothers couldn't answer. And Chazal say, the shame that the brothers had at that moment is reminiscent of the shame that every person will have when he's in Shemayim. Because oy lanu miyom adin ve'oy lanu miyom atochecha. Woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us from the day of proof. Chazal say that when a person is taken up to Shemayim, the first thing Hashem does is brings him to Yom HaTochecha, the day of proof, where God faces a person up to himself. God says, I will weigh you against yourself, against your own ideals. You judge yourself. We'll take the way you behaved when someone did this to you, and now let's see what you yourself did. How zealous were you about this with regard to someone else? How zealous were you with yourself? We're just going to measure you according to your own standards. Only we have a double standard. When it's convenient to us, we have one standard. And when it's convenient to us, we have a different standard. So Hashem says, first there's Yom HaTochecha. Before I judge you, first you'll judge yourself. I'll put you up against yourself. That's the shame that the brothers felt when they were faced with Yosef. Yosef calls them gently. And Yosef says, it's me. It's Yosef. I'm the one. And I'll prove it to you because there's something I know that no one else knows. And that is that you sold me down here. No one knows that. You made a pact then that no one would know. You didn't tell anyone, and I didn't tell anyone. So the only one that knows that is me and you. Yosef says, don't be upset that you sold me. You had to get me down here to save the world. I'm saving the world. And obviously that was my purpose in life. But I guess the only way I could get here was through that. So don't be upset over it. And I'll tell you what, based upon my information, there are still 5 years left of the famine. So go back up and bring Abba down here and tell him that I'm in charge of everything that's going on and that he will be able to live in the land of Goshen. The land of Goshen belongs to us. When Pharaoh abducted Sarah, when he let her go, he gave her a gift in the land of Goshen. You won't be visitors here. I'll put you in the land of Goshen, which belongs to us legally, and you'll be able to live with everything you need. Why should you be knocked out financially back there in Canaan? And now look, I'm talking to you our language, Lashon HaKodesh. No one else here knows it. And tell my father all the honor we have here. And then he weeps. And he kisses the brothers and weeps. And when they see that he kisses them and he's weeping and they see where his heart is, only after this whole speech, and that they see him crying, only then do they start talking. Well, what have you been up to? What's happened? And Paro hears, and Paro figures this is really good for the Egyptian economy. Until now, Paro kept thinking, this guy showed up out of nowhere, he might just disappear one day. So Paro tells Yosef, get the family down here, why should they suffer up there? Paro's thinking, this is going to be really good for the economy. If I had one genius here, and he turned around all of Egypt, what's going to be if I have another 10 just like him? And if I have his whole family down here, well, then I'm guaranteed he's not leaving. So Paro makes an exception. Ordinarily, the Egyptians used to breed calves, and any calf that left Egypt, they'd cut out its womb to ensure that you couldn't have another calf like that anywhere but Egypt. You wouldn't be able to breed more calves like the Egyptian calves. Paro says, you take the calves and you go bring your father down and don't worry about it. We're going to make an exception here. Bring everyone down. Yosef gives them gifts. He gives gifts for his father. And the brothers send word to Asher's adopted daughter, Serach. Serach is the adopted daughter of Asher. She is the daughter from his wife. And Yaakov sends word, the brothers send word to Serach, the daughter of Asher, prepare Yaakov for the news that Yosef's still alive. So Serach starts singing a song and playing music next to Yaakov. And every time she'd hit the, what's it called, the line that keeps repeating itself in a song?
The chorus.
The refrain. Every time she hits the refrain is, and Yosef's still alive, and Yosef's still alive. And Yaakov's doing his thing. Suddenly he looks at her and says, what are you talking about, Yosef's still alive? 22 years have passed. What do you mean Yosef's still alive? Stop it. She continues the song, and Yosef's still alive. And she's setting the groundwork for the brothers to give him the news. Yeah, Shmuel, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just wondering, is it... In the Torah it said you should love the... Oh, how do I put this? Like, do not despise the Egyptian because you were an immigrant in his land.
Correct.
So after the third generation, you can get married with them, even though they're one of the seven Canaanite nations, which you're not allowed to marry.
Okay.
Now, because Pharaoh allowed, let's say, like, showed maybe, I don't know, maybe out of a not sincere motive, but showed some kindness to Yosef's whole family, like, why are they suffering in Canaan? Bring them here, I'll provide for them, I'll give them Goshen, whatever. Was this a reward for this maybe?
Right, 100%, right? You're right, yes.
So it's because of this that
Correct.
It's in the Torah written down.
Correct.
Okay.
The brothers come in and they tell him, Yosef's still alive. And he's ruling all of Egypt. And Yaakov faints on the spot. And they tell him, but there's bad news too. The famine is going to last another 5 years. And Yosef sent a sign. He said, the last thing Dad taught me is that when someone travels, you accompany them out of the city. That's the parasha of Egla Arufa. So show Dad the calves, the way we discussed 2 weeks ago, and tell him that that's a sign. The last thing he taught me was Egla Arufa, the importance of accompaniment. And I'm sending these calves to accompany him down to Egypt. And when he sees that, he says, oh, he's still Jewish. It's Yosef, and he's kept everything I've taught him. And Yaakov's spirit comes back to life. He again has Ruach HaKodesh, and he blesses Serach Bas Asher with exceptional longevity. Serach Bas Asher is going to live for centuries. Serach is going to be with us for a long, long time. She's the one to whom the Jews turn and ask, should we go with this man, Moneus, otherwise known as Moshe, who says that God sent him to take us out of Egypt. She's the one that the Jews turn to and say, is he for real or is he a fake? Just like Nun, the guy who led the tribe of Ephraim out of Egypt a few decades too early, and they all got killed. And she checks him out and says he's for real. And this same Serach, Asher's stepdaughter, this same Serach is the one that Moshe himself turns to a year later when it's time to leave Egypt, and he says, you've been around for a long time. Tell me, where's Yosef buried? We're supposed to take his bones out of here. Where do I come across his bones? And Serach helps him out, shows him where. Yes, Yontani.
Rabbi, yesterday I read in the Ramban that Yaakov, he cried when he heard about the news. His spirit went out of him and then it came back.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
When Yaakov and all his sons went down to Mitzrayim, how long did they plan on being down there for? Just to the end of the famine? They had no clue how long they'd be there for 200 some years.
Let's wait and see. We'll get there. Yes.
Rabbi, when all the brothers come and see Yosef and they don't recognize him, why does Yosef put this whole act, why doesn't he just tell him right away, I'm Yosef, your brother,
So we gave three reasons for that.
Can you say them again? Maybe I forgot.
We said there was a point of solidarity to bring the brothers unified. There was a point of verifying that, making a sign come true that the future prophecy of Mashiach ben Yosef and the future of the Jewish people would be locked in, and this would be a sign to ensure that the dreams would come true also in the future, the other interpretation of the dream.
Okay.
And we said that there was also an opportunity for tshuva for the brothers. This was one opportunity where the brothers could make up what they did there by standing up for Binyamin. There are another few answers that Chazal give. But these are three of the answers.
The main three.
I didn't say main. Three of the answers. Previous years we discussed other answers. Yes.
So what it said, were the Jewish nations, the Jewish nation bow before Yosef with Moshiach ben Yosef?
Well, we bow for any other king. Why wouldn't we bow for him? We bowed to David. We bowed in Tanakh. It's filled with bowing before kings.
Okay, because this is very interesting what Rabbi just said. When Moshiach ben Yosef were here, we were Nahut testing.
We will?
We will know who we...
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I can only say what it says. I don't know more than that. I'm happy if I know that. You want something now? Okay. So you'll notice that from Chamishi onward, suddenly we stop referring to Yaakov as Yaakov. Suddenly the Torah is talking about Yisrael. That's the change we discussed in the beginning of the parasha. And initially the Torah tells us, Vayomer Yisrael, Yaakov said, oh, my son Yosef's alive. Elecha ve'er'enu b'terem amut. I'll go see him before I die. Let's go make a visit to Egypt. Yaakov isn't going there to live. Yaakov is going to visit Yosef. Yosef said, come live here. Yaakov said, let me go see him before I die. But Yaakov wants validation for this attitude, so he travels to Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is the place where Yitzchak traveled when he thought he was going to live in Egypt, and God said to him, don't go live in Egypt. Yaakov wants God to tell him the same thing he said to Yitzchak. God had told Yitzchak, no, you don't go down to Egypt. Yaakov is going to Be'er Sheva bringing sacrifices with the thought, I'm going to go visit Egypt and come back. There's a looming threat. God had already told Avraham, Yadoa teda ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem va'avadum v'inu otam 400 shana. In the covenant, God said, you should know your seed is going to be sojourners in a foreign land, and over there they will be tortured. They will work for 400 years. Yaakov is scared of that. So far it hasn't been so bad. Chazal say it had to get worse at this point. And there were two ways it could have happened. God could have sent a group of bandits and they would have walked in with their machetes, took Yaakov and his families in shackles and sold them all into slavery into Egypt. And then the prophecy would have come true. We would have stayed in Egypt until Moshe came and we would have come out of Egypt. But God did us a favor. God had Yaakov come down to Egypt in glory. Came down to a son who's king. came down to a land where they'd have their own ghetto. They live alone in Goshen. And he's living in style. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He's just a stranger. And there's one more thing. He can't leave. Paro keeps the city locked. And if anyone wants to leave, they have to ask permission. And they don't grant passports in Egypt. Even Yosef, when he wants to leave, is denied a passport. We're going to see in next week's parsha, when Yosef wants to go bury his father, Paro says, "No, I'm sorry, that's not possible." And there's a whole back and forth between Yosef and Paro until finally Yosef gets approval to go bury him. So Yaakov gets a surprise. God appears to him and says, "Yaakov, Yaakov, I'm the God of your father. I'm the one who told him, don't go down to Egypt. And I'm telling you, don't worry. You have to go down to Egypt. If you remain here in the land of Israel, your children will continue marrying Canaanite women, and the people of Israel will be lost. The only way you can grow into a people is by going down to Egypt. Legoy gadol asimecha sham. Over there you will become a great nation. Here in Canaan you don't have a future. Here in Canaan it's too comfortable. Vayeshev Yaakov, you've settled down, Yaakov, in Canaan. You've become a member of society and your children are marrying the Canaanite women. This isn't going to work." So God tells Yaakov, "I'll go with you and I'll come back with you." And that period of living in Egypt will form the nation. Ve'anochi a'alcha gamalo, I will bring you out of Egypt and continue uplifting you when you leave Egypt. A'alcha gamalo, I'll bring you up and up from there. From there you'll only go up. And Yosef's going to take care of you. You won't have to deal with the Egyptians. Yaakov got good news and bad news and difficult news. And he's got to go. So they start traveling down to Egypt. And this time, the pasuk stresses, they took everything. They took their wealth, they took their cattle, they took the whole family and started heading south to Egypt. And the pasuk says, "Vayis'u v'nei Yisrael." You notice the change? Now we're talking about Bnei Israel. Now the Jewish people take Yaakov down to Egypt. Now, at this point in Torah, we start talking about the people of Israel. We've just underwent the change. With that vision in Be'er Sheva, God told Yaakov, now you're starting to be a people. You're going to go down to Egypt, and that's where you will become a great nation. So, Vayisu Bnei Israel, the nation of Bnei Israel. What is the word Yisrael? God, Yisrael is the capacity to overcome nature, to overcome the kings that try to put us down. So that's why Hashem appeared to Yaakov and said, "Yisrael, now your children are going to have to fight for their existence, and within that fight they will overcome. Now is when you're starting to be Bnei Yisrael." What does the word ben mean?
Son of
son.
Ben means son. What does it mean? Bar, also son. What's bar mitzvah? Bar mitzvah, son of a mitzvah?
Right, son of a mitzvah.
No.
Son that becomes older.
Ben also means having the capacity to contain. Capacity to have. Deservant of. Bnei Yisrael doesn't only mean the sons of Israel. Bnei Yisrael also means right. The capacity to be Yisrael. To be, the capacity
to be a nation.
To be Sarita. To be a Sar. Yisrael is the power to be a Sar. Yisrael. The power to be a leader. To be on top. To overcome. That's the hidden meaning of Yisrael. We are all called Bnei Yisrael. Every one of us has the capacity to be Yisrael. Sarita, you have overcome im Elokim v'anashim. The powerful ones, be them celestial beings, be them corporeal beings. They're coming down to Mitzrayim. Yes, sir.
Rabbi, isn't this like bothers me a little bit that it says over here that in Egypt you should leave Eretz Israel and go to Egypt and there you'll become a great nation, whereas doing like with Abraham and everything it says go to Eretz Canaan and dwell there, leave, you know, like the place that you were in Ur Chasdim and go there and there I'll make you a great nation. And it's and like you said, like they remain in Canaan, in fact they'll get assimilated now. But even though that's like their hometown, like Israel. So how come like in this case it says go down to Egypt and there you can become a strong people, but don't stay in Canaan because there you might, you know, there's famine and you might get assimilated with the Canaanite women. It's like a reverse.
It's an excellent question. We have to rewind a little bit. Let's go back. You guys hear his question? He's saying, really, God promised Avram, Lech Lecha, go to the land of Israel, Ve'eschal le'goy gadol, and there you'll become a great nation. And now we're saying that God is telling Yaakov, you want to become a great nation, you got to go down to Egypt. So he's saying, wait a second, but God said in Canaan is where Ve'eschal le'goy gadol. So if we were learning more in depth, we would research a little bit what's the difference between E'escha and Asimecha. Meaning, over here it says Asimecha le'goy gadol, over there it says E'escha le'goy gadol. But now, we could understand maybe two answers that Chazal tell us. They're not answering this specific question, but Chazal do give us other insights that really answer this question. God tells Avram, go to Canaan. And in Canaan, you'll become a great nation. Why then does there have to be a decree your seed will be strangers in a foreign land for 400 years? So, one understanding is that that was a punishment. For what? Machlokes. For what?
Avram giving land away to...
That's the Rashbam, right? Right?
Philistine,
yeah. That's the Rashbam's understanding. The Ramban says it's because he let them take away his wife. He didn't stand up and fight for her. Different understandings as to what he did to deserve that. But you see that the original plan was without this decree. So we could say that really they would have become a great nation in Israel. We could also say, Chazal tell us, had the brothers been unified, had the brothers maintained brotherly love with Yosef, had they not sold Yosef, we wouldn't have ended up in Egypt. So that gives us an insight that even though God had said you will be strangers in a foreign land for 400 years, that could have all happened in Canaan. The only reason it didn't happen in Canaan was because we were not unified, Chazal say. But really, even after the prophecy of the Brit Menabtarim, Chazal had a tradition that prophecy could have been fulfilled the last 210 years, just like the first 190. The first 190 years happened in the land of Canaan. The next 210 years could have also happened in the land of Canaan. When the brothers were not unified, when Yaakov treated Yosef differently than he treated the other brothers, that's what led to the divisiveness and ultimately to the Jewish people's descent down to Egypt. It could be that after we weren't united, then we couldn't develop in Canaan anymore. Then we needed these external forces, as was always our history. So whenever we were good with one another, the nations, we could be anywhere we could deal with the nations. The second there was divisiveness within, so God sends us troubles from without to help us unite. So the divisiveness of Yosef was healed through the 210 years of being in Egypt, and there we were forced to live off of one another and to be united. Yeah.
Rabbi, then I think it's like history, can I make a connection, like history repeated itself, because like we weren't destined for the 2000 year exile, like we would have been in with the first temple if we would have remained united. So this was the same case with the Egyptian exile.
I hear. You mean the second temple? I hear, yeah. Okay. Yes, Yonatan, sorry.
Rabbi, can it also be when Abraham went down, when Abram went left, look at the Jews, And now she prophesied, I will make a great nation. Thus it means the 70 nations will come out of him, and the nation, the Jewish nation, will go. There will be 70 people, and they will go down to Egypt, and they will become the nation to the light of the world, to bring the light to the world.
I don't know. Yaakov is taking the Jews down. He's taking his family of 70. Here we find that the Torah rounds out the number. This is one place where we see the Torah uses round numbers, even though the exact number you see was not 70. So the Torah uses round numbers. Those of you who were in our Thursday night learning, we learned the Ramban, and the Ramban quoted the Yerushalmi that says it explicitly. And the Torah tells us that Yosef himself saddled his chariot, went out to greet Yisrael. Notice again, the Torah is calling him Yisrael, and he weeps. He kisses his father, and his father will not kiss him till the day he dies. Yosef kisses Yaakov, but Yaakov will never kiss Yosef.
Why? Can I try to answer?
Well, Chazal tell us the answer.
Okay. He's you better know than me, so.
Okay.
Hey, we already learned this.
I know.
Oh, you guys learned it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so, I want to say, I came up with a crazy story here.
Chazal say that Yaakov questioned what happened with Yosef. What happened all those years? What women was he with? Was he faithful to Judaism all those years? And so Yaakov, as holy as he was and as much as he loved Yosef, he loved him, but he kept his distance. And this distance was mutual. Yosef is going to spend the next decades keeping a distance from his father Yaakov, because he never wants to be caught alone with Yaakov. He never wants that opportunity to arise for Yaakov to say, gee, Yosef, what did happen those 22 years? Until the time that Yaakov is on his deathbed in next week's parasha, Yosef's going to keep a distance. Chazal tell us sometimes the best way to honor our parents is by keeping a distance.
Wow, that is very true. That's why I'm here and my parents are here. You're welcome.
There were a few stories like this. But sometimes you should call when you know you won't catch them and leave a message.
And when they pick up, it's kind of awkward. I was just going to leave a message.
Depends on the circumstance. There was a big rabbi named the Chassam Sofer. You guys heard of him?
The what?
Chassam Sofer. A big rabbi in Hungary. When he was at his bar mitzvah, he gave a speech. He quoted Dvar Torah his grandfather said, and then he explained why he thought it was wrong. His father got up in front of the whole crowd and started beating him. What the nerve of you! You're contradicting your grandfather! His Rebbe stood up, stood between his father and the son, and said, stop beating him. So the father said, what a chutzpah, what do you mean? Now his Rebbe wasn't a small man, it was Rav Nassan Adler. He was like one of the chief rabbis of Europe at the time. Rav Nassan Adler said, but the boy's right. The grandfather was wrong. You can't beat him when he says things you don't want him to hear. You don't like hearing. And seeing how his father beat him, Rav Nassan Adler took him into his own home, and the Chassam Sofer grew up really by his Rebbe. He stayed away from his father because his father wouldn't let him grow. His father would have beaten him.
Is there a future with this father? Maybe 20 years later?
I don't know the future.
Muhammad is doing the same thing for me.
Okay, I mean, look, but a 13-year-old boy, you gotta have patience with the kid. He did end up leading all of Europe. The Chassam Sofer was we learn his response daily. He's the basis of much of halacha today. He was a genius. He was brilliant. He was also a 13-year-old boy, you know.
Was this the Bar Torah so, this week? Or?
I don't know which week it was. At any rate, so the kavod over here was that Yosef kept the distance. Yes, sir.
Why did Yosef keep a distance if he did nothing wrong?
How do you think his father would have felt had he known? Sometimes it's the issue isn't whether you're right or wrong. The issue is if my parents don't know that someone else is wrong, it's in their interest too.
Do we know that?
If Yaakov would have known that the brothers sold Yosef, Yaakov would have felt terrible about the brothers. He didn't want Yaakov to know.
The Rav said in the beginning of the class, Yaakov didn't know. So he said
he suspected. He suspected them. Now Yaakov has to wonder, gee, I wonder what happened those 22 years. Was he abducted? Well, what happened? Yes, sir.
Do we know the truth of what happened those 22 years?
We have what the Torah tells us. The Torah doesn't give us a minute-by-minute account. The Torah tells us what we need to know. I'll tell you, we have to hold off on questions because we have 5 minutes left. I try to end on time. Yaakov sends Yehuda in advance. Rabbi Wein always says our galus was defined by the one who led the way. When we were exiled, the Babylonian exiles, so prior to the exile, the king exiled all the rabbis. He said, maybe if I exile the rabbis and the leaders, that will cause no more rebellions. That will ensure that the people won't rebel anymore. So he exiled all the rabbis and leaders. And then the Jews rebelled anyway, so he had to exile everyone. But this first exile was really a favor to the Jewish people. The fact that the rabbis were there in Babylon and established yeshivas, that ensured that when the rest of the Jews were exiled to Babylon, we were exiled to a place that was thriving in Torah. By the same token, Yaakov sends Yehuda first, before he comes down to Egypt. Probably the biggest mistake Machon Meir students make is the place they decide to leave after the place they decide to live after they leave Machon Meir. They don't take this into account. They figure, I grew up in a Hicksville where there was no Torah and I came out okay, so I could go live there. It's not going to work, guys. You're lucky you came out okay. Look at all your brothers dating shiksas. You guys know that? I'm quoting from the beginning of Shir. No, let's be realistic. No, I'm not joking. I'm not joking at all. I'm talking the truth. Guys, look around you. Look at where the rest of your families ended up. You can't say that. The biggest mistake that guys make here is that guys think that if I made it okay, no, so I can do this to my kids too. That's a big mistake. And that was what Yaakov knew. There are two ways to ensure continuity with the Jewish people. Education and marriage. There are two things that can maintain the Jewish people. Education, so he sends Yehuda in advance. In marriage, he marries off every child in the group. He marries off everyone. Even the little ones know who their shidduch is going to be. They enter Egypt, 70 matches, 70 pairs. The Torah will describe in Parshas Shmos that when we entered Egypt, it was Ish Ubeiso. What mitzvah did we just do last week? Ner Ish Ubeiso. Siegel pointed this out to me, Nassim Siegel, that the term Ishu Beiso is found in the Torah regarding the Jews going down to Egypt. The Rishonim write, the idea was, you want to last in the Galus, you need to have Ishu Beiso, every person has to have the home, the Jewish home, and he also has to have the education, the light. So he sends Yehuda first. I apologize if I offended anyone. I didn't mean to offend anyone, but that's no excuse. I meant what I said, but maybe I should have said it more gently. The Torah records how Yosef himself went out of the crowd and he went to his father. Yosef brings his brethren to Paro and he's got to explain why they're not fit to be leaders, they're just cattlemen and they should stay out in Goshen. Pharaoh sees Yaakov. And Yaakov has come to Egypt in the hope that his troubles are over. Remember, Yaakov has led a difficult life. And so when Pharaoh sees him, he's unaccustomed to seeing such old people. He looks at him and says, old man, how many days have you lived? And Yaakov says, well, it's not the way you think. Living is living a life that's worth living. There were many years of my life that were not worth living, that you can't call them years of life. If you discuss with me Shnei Megurai, the number of years that I existed on the planet, that's 130 years. But if you want to know how many years I had Chayai, I had life on this planet, those were few, and so my life was bitter, and I did not live like my forefathers. My father and grandfather, they outlived me, and they had a far more peaceful life. I prayed to God that from now I'll be able to calm down, and that's part of Yaakov's prayer earlier to Hashem when he went to Be'er Sheva. He's asking Hashem, he says, Amuta apam, let me die now. He sees Yosef and he says, God, I stood up to so many tests. Let me die and let this have been my last test. And to an extent it seems like Yaakov's request was accepted. We don't find Yaakov contending with other tests till the day he died. When Yaakov went to Egypt, he said, Amuta apam. He sees Yosef, he says, I've seen Yosef. This horror story came to a beautiful ending. Let's end it. God, I've stood up to the test. Now let me end. Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering, Yaakov dies in Mitzrayim.
Yes, Yaakov dies in Mitzrayim.
What did he do to deserve that? He was the guy named Israel. Like, that's where we got that name. Like, I feel like he maybe died. He deserved the merit of dying in Israel. And, you know, like, why?
He was buried in Israel.
Well, he was buried in Israel.
Right.
Chazal
say he caused it. He was the one that treated the kids differently, that caused disharmony between them. Okay. We're out of time.